Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar, which covers opportunities in communications in the Fulbright Scholar Program. I'd like to clarify that this webinar today features awards specifically for academics and professionals. So if you are a student or pursuing a graduate degree, either a master's or a PhD, you may be interested in looking at the website for the Fulbright Student Program. Anybody also interested in short-term opportunities should take a look at the Fulbright Specialist Program. But today we're focusing specifically on the Fulbright Scholar Program, which offers awards to teach and research abroad. My name is Michelle Belorci, and I'm on the outreach and recruitment team at the Institute of International Education in Washington, D.C., and I will be guiding you today through this webinar on the opportunities in not only communications but journalism as well, because a lot of the awards in the catalog have some awards that cater to both disciplines. And so I'll be giving you an overview of the program and some application components, and then we'll be taking a look around at all of the regions, the six world regions, and highlighting some of the awards that might be of interest to you. So just a little bit about the Fulbright program. It was established in 1946 by the Department of State under the, promoted by William Fulbright, the senator in Arkansas, and it is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State, and IIE administers it on behalf of the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. And so we have been working collaboratively for the past 70 years on this program, and you can see just by the picture that this program has really evolved over the past seven decades. The traditional profile of the scholar going abroad to teach and research has really evolved to, we've got a lot of different programs available in the whole suite of Fulbright. You can see on the left was one of our first grantees to Burma in 1960, and on the right we have a picture of the Fulbright Arctic Initiative, and that was a new initiative developed by the Fulbright program. And so there's a lot of opportunities that have been built into the program, different ways to participate in the program, and also different profiles that we're interested in. So there is really something for everybody, and we hope that you can see through the next few slides how you may get involved with Fulbright. So just to clarify from the start, in terms of eligibility, this is for U.S. citizens. So this is one of the largest government programs in terms of educational exchange, and so U.S. citizenship is required from if you're applying from the United States. And then depending on the award that you apply to, there are different requirements. So each award has different requirements in terms of degree, language, teaching experience, et cetera. We have several awards open to professionals. So if you are a journalist and you're not in academics, but you have several years of experience as a journalist, there would be several opportunities for you. And we also have some new policies in terms of previous grantees, Fulbright grantees, applying for other grants in the Fulbright program. There are no lifetime caps. We've removed that. However, we do ask that you wait 2 years from the time that you complete your grant to the time that you apply for another grant. So all of those eligibility details can be found on our website, but it really is important to take a look at what each award is looking for. Real quick, in terms of the application components, they're outlined here, and we also provide in-depth advising and application walkthroughs in our webinar, so take a look at the ones that are coming up. We've also recorded a couple that are now archived, but it is an application form that's online, and the main component is the project statement, so that's something that you'd want to get started on right away. This is actually perfect timing because we have a little over 2 months before the August 1st deadline. So the project statement really makes, one of the key pieces of the application. And then, of course, the CV and letters of reference. And then depending on the award requirements, if you're doing a teaching award, then syllabi. If there's research in your project, then a selected bibliography. And then, again, depending on the requirements of the award, a language proficiency report from an external evaluator, and a letter of invitation from the host institution. In terms of supplemental materials, journalists would require to submit some supplemental materials, and I'll be sharing a little more about that. But this is kind of a rough sketch of what the application is made up of. So in terms of applicants with a journalism background, we do ask that you upload some supplemental materials and that they do not exceed certain size limits, file size limits. So, for example, writing samples, no more than 15 pages. And if you are submitting, you know, some files in a zip, it cannot exceed 500 MB. So take a look for that. That is something that you would add up to, you know, upload directly to the application. Now, in terms of letters of invitation, getting the letter of invitation from a host, it's important first to take a look at if it's a requirement or, you know, what the wording is in terms of the award requirement. There are a handful of awards in the catalog that specifically state a letter of invitation should not be sought. If, however, it says it's optional or strongly preferred or required, we do have several resources to help you identify a host institution so that you can procure a letter of invitation. So the one thing is, the first thing you'd want to do is take a look at the award description and see if they list any particular locations where the award, where the grantee would be placed. So I'll be pointing out some of the awards that we have in the catalog that actually have partnerships with specific universities. So you don't really have to look far because those universities are named. They're also given maybe a contact person and the email address that you can write to them. So that's the kind of way to start, is to see if they've already identified potential hosts. If a host institution, however, is not identified, then we do have several resources. The first place you might want to start is if you're based at a university, you could speak to the campus liaison, the Fulbright campus liaison, or your international office and see if you have any collaborations with institutions in that country of interest. Another way is to reach out to grantees that have been there. So we have the Fulbright Scholar Directory that's linked on our website, and also once we archive this webinar, you'll be able to click directly on the links here. So the Scholar Directory is a wonderful tool for you to search by discipline or host country or host institution to see where other grantees have gone and make some contacts with them to see if they can assist you. You can also reach out to us, the program staff that manage the different awards, and we might be able to get some insight from the Fulbright commissions or the embassies that administer the Fulbright program abroad. Now, keep in mind, in terms of the letter of invitation and what it does, it certainly would enhance your application if it's not required. But keep in mind, it is a non-binding expression of interest. So, for example, you know, there might be an award that lists a partner university. That means that that's the only host institution where scholars can be placed. So they may issue, you know, they'll probably be issuing several letters of invitation to anybody who's hoping to apply for that award. So it doesn't mean that there's any guarantee, but it certainly is a great way to gauge interest and see if your project is relevant to the host institution or the host country. The letter should be addressed to you, and you would be uploading it directly to the application online. So it should be addressed to you, and it should come from the person you hope to collaborate with. If it's coming from the president of the university or the rector or the dean, that's not necessary unless you plan to collaborate with them. So keep in mind that it doesn't have to be somebody who has a very high rank or position at the university. It really just needs to come from the person that will be working with you on your project. And, of course, it should be on the institutional letterhead. Now, what you would see here is the catalog of awards. This is the landing page for the catalog. And if you'll notice on the left-hand side, we have the various drop-down menus so that you can filter according to either discipline or grant length. Let's say you only can get away for 3 months. You can specifically search for grants that are 3 months or shorter. You can also search for grants that do not require a PhD or a terminal degree. So there's different ways to kind of navigate through the catalog. And if we have time at the end, I may do that. But I do want to point out that it's very searchable. You can even type in keywords. So if you're looking at, you know, something with communications and you're looking at intercultural, you want to see that intercultural keyword, you can type that in and you can find awards that are really keen on intercultural communication. So that's one way to search the catalog. And I think then now we can proceed, let's see, with taking a look at the various awards that we have available. Now, if I just going back to the catalog in terms of what we offer, there are 471 awards available that offer 800 grants. So the 800 grant opportunities means 800 scholars can go abroad this year. Of these 471 awards, 95 awards are specifically interested in communications or journalism applicants. And they list that as a preferred discipline. And then, of course, there are over 220 awards that are open to all disciplines, so there's a lot to choose from. So we're starting out now with Sub-Saharan Africa, and the awards that I want to highlight here, the awards to Swaziland in Mass Communications and Broadcast Journalism. So this really is looking for experts to teach specialized areas such as radio production, television production, community broadcasting, and drama production or documentaries. They have an interest in teaching or teaching and research projects. A PhD or a terminal degree is not required, and scholars will be affiliated either with the University of Swaziland or the KwaZulu-Natal University. The great thing about this award is that on-campus housing is provided, and they're looking for scholars to come for one or two semesters, 5 to 10 months. The other opportunity highlighted here is the Sierra Leone All Disciplines Award. This is to teach undergrad or graduate courses and collaborate with faculty in terms of curriculum development and program development. Communications and journalism are both preferred disciplines in this award, and there are three potential host institutions that scholars could be affiliated with. One is in the capital of Freetown, and the other two are located about 3-hour drive outside of the capital. Grants can begin only in September of 2019, so right at the start of the academic year. And then finally, the award to Zambia. This is specifically looking for journalism and broadcasting experts, so to teach students and provide lectures to students as well as faculty. So there's really kind of a capacity building element in this. Specifically, they're looking for experts in reporting or ethics, new media, or writing and news editing. A PhD is not required, and this is a teaching and research award. So the percentage of teaching and research can be determined by the applicant, but reaching out to the host institutions would be one way of identifying that. And then in the Middle East and North Africa, and by the way, I just want to point out that for each of these awards in terms of regions, you'll note that I've listed the contact email address at the right top right corner, so in this case, Middle East North Africa at IIE.org. So the program staff that manages these awards will be there to help you. So while I'm not an expert for all of the world regions, you know, my colleagues who cover those regions can assist you further in terms of specific questions. Okay, so moving along to the opportunities in the Middle East and North Africa, we have first the award to Jordan, which is an all-disciplines award. However, they are keen on scholars from communications, particularly those that, you know, incorporate teaching in their projects. The host can be a university, but they're also open to affiliating scholars with research centers or government ministries or NGOs. And if scholars propose to teach, there is a strong preference for PhDs, but if you can propose it in such a way, then they may make an exception for that. The Fulbright Commission in Jordan is extremely supportive, and they will help scholars find housing. You know, they do you know, holiday parties, networking events, so that you can meet other scholars when you're there in country. They also help with dependents who are there, finding different volunteer or work opportunities if they accompany the grantee. And all teaching will be done in English, but there are also short-term regional grants available. So in terms of the once you're in country, scholars can apply for a regional travel grant for about up to 2 weeks. So this is another way to have a broader experience as a Fulbrighter in the region. Now, the award to Kuwait is also an all-disciplines award, but again, they have a preference for journalism or mass communications. This is a 9-month grant, but the flex option is available. So if you're not sure what flex means, we do have some information on our website, but essentially it allows you to break up the grant into two segments so that you complete the 9 months over 2 academic years. So this is a great way, if you're not able to get away from your home institution for the full academic year, you can break it up. So there's more information on the award description there. And they're looking for scholars to teach and research. And then in Qatar, they have two host institutions that they would place scholars in. So this is a 5 to 10 month grant. And Qatar University is in Doha, which is also the home to Al Jazeera News Network. So that might be exciting for some applicants. Qatar University also provides grantees with office space and furnished housing. So this is another perk as part of the award. Experience in teaching first-year students is preferred, and they're looking for scholars who have experience in embedded technologies in the classroom or offering, you know, online courses. So there's, again, more information you can find in the award description on the award to Qatar. All right, moving along to the Western Hemisphere, we have an exciting opportunity in Barbados and the Eastern Caribbean. So this is a 4 to 9 month grant that offers scholars the opportunity to teach or conduct research on one of the 7 Eastern Caribbean islands. Journalism and film studies are preferred disciplines for this award, and they're especially looking for scholars to be placed at St. Vincent and the Grenadines Community College. And again, flex option is available for scholars who are interested. And in Chile, we have a grant for 3 to 4 months that offers, that is specifically looking for journalism and communications scholars with that background. If you don't have a working knowledge of Spanish, that's okay, but it would be helpful in Chile. But again, take a look at the specific requirements of the award. And then lastly, Suriname, which is on the north eastern coast of South America, has an all-disciplines award. And this is a small country that's near Brazil, but they do have, they've had a Dutch legacy. So if you have a working knowledge of Dutch, that might be of interest to you because, of course, you would be a better fit for this award, but it is not required. So keep that in mind. And journalism is one of the preferred disciplines for this award. All right, moving on to South and Central Asia. We have in India the Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Awards. There are several grants available under this award, and they are looking for all disciplines, and journalism communications is included, and also early career applicants in terms of early academic, postdoc students. We also have a Distinguished Chair Award that's under the same name, the Fulbright Nehru Distinguished Chair Award. It's also open to all disciplines. Both of them do not require a letter of invitation, but it is optional to provide that. And, of course, India being the world's largest democracy and the second most populous country in the world, it's an exciting place to go as a Fulbright scholar. English is also used extensively, especially in media and higher education. So it's a wonderful opportunity. If you're not specifically sure where you may go, India might be of interest to you. And then in Kazakhstan, we have up to 5 grants for this All Disciplines Award, and communications and journalism are both listed as preferred disciplines. What's interesting about Kazakhstan is they recently announced that they have plans to make English as the third national language, third official language after Kazakh and Russian. So this would also be a wonderful time to go to the country as a Fulbrighter and be part of this initiative and really have an impact. And then in terms of the Maldives, we have an all disciplines award where they prefer journalism candidates. Grants begin in January and they last 6 months. And Fulbright scholars would have the opportunity to contribute to a relatively new higher education system. So, you know, the Maldives is a rather new democracy. They had their first elections in 2008. So it's an interesting place to be in terms of building the U.S.-Maldivian relationship. So they're looking for projects that contribute to that and, you know, speak to kind of the capacity building in higher education there. All right, moving on to East Asia and the Pacific, we have an award to Australia that's based at the University of Canberra for 5 or 10 months, so 1 or 2 semesters. And it's open to academics at the associate or full professor level to undertake research or consult on curriculum at the university, which is located in the capital. So projects are particularly sought in the area of communications. And the University of Canberra has 4 dedicated research centers devoted to understanding all aspects of communication. So this might be something of interest to you if you're at that level or rank in your career. A letter of invitation is required, and if you'd like to get more information on how you can reach out to the university, we do have some contact information on the website. And then moving on to Indonesia, we have the All Disciplines Award that's open to media studies and communication specifically, but again, open to all areas of specialization. And additional funding is available in Indonesia if the scholar would like to take, you know, any particular academic-related trips, up to 2 trips within the country, you know, for conferences or workshops, et cetera. And grantees are also encouraged to conduct engagement projects with their host institutions. A letter of invitation is strongly preferred, and it should come from the higher education institution where you'll be based. And the last award we have there is Japan, and this is the journalism award with the flex option. So there's 2 different awards. One is listed as journalism, and the other one is listed as journalism with flex. And the purpose of this award is to provide opportunities for both junior and senior journalists who work in print, broadcast, and digital media to become better informed about Japan. Conduct research in your area of specialization, and that research should result in a tangible product appropriate to your particular field of journalism. For example, a series of articles or a television program or a series of radio stories on some facet of Japan. So really kind of delving into that. Applicants must be working journalists and have at least 3 years of experience. So if you do propose, and in terms of the flex option, if you do propose a project for the flex option, keep that in mind, should be addressed and justified in your project statement. All right, and finally, we're moving on to Europe and Eurasia, and this is a vast region that, in this region alone, there are 48 award opportunities in communications and journalism, so there's really no way to capture the breadth of opportunities available, but I've listed 5 here to kind of give you an idea of what's available. Starting out with Belgium, we have the Fulbright Schumann Chair at the College of Europe in Bruges in Belgium. And this is one of the few Distinguished Chair Awards that we've highlighted. So just to give you an idea about the Distinguished Chair, applicants must have an extensive publication record and teaching experience as well. And for that, there are different, you can have a bit of a longer CV when you upload it to the application. So be sure to look at that. So this is a Distinguished Chair Award to teach and research. Preferred specializations within communications are EU and US relations and security studies. The College of Europe is an interesting host. It was founded in 1949, and it's not only an important European institution, but it's also an international hub for students and faculty alike. And the Fulbright Commission in Belgium is also very supportive. They pay They pay for transportation and participation for the grantee to attend the EU-NATO seminar that's held every year in Brussels or in Luxembourg. It alternates. So if your grant takes place during the spring when that seminar is held, then they'll provide funding for that. And then the award to Hungary, the University of Pécs, the grant there. Pécs is actually a kind of a hidden gem, I would say, of Hungary. It's a charming city about 3 hours south of Budapest, southwest. And this is the oldest university in Hungary. It was established in 1367. So a wonderful chance to experience teaching and research there. The university has been offering programs in English, degree-granting programs in English for the past 30 years, and students and faculty come from over 80 countries, so it's quite international. Currently, the university offers 50 different international degree programs taught mostly in English or German, so this is another wonderful way to experience Hungary outside of Budapest. Communications and journalism are both preferred disciplines, and the great thing is that housing is provided. All right, and then Latvia, located on the Baltic Sea, you can affiliate with one of 5 host institutions listed in the award description, and they have a specific interest in intercultural communications, strategic communications, communications management, and media literacy. And the award to Turkey, the Social Sciences, Humanities, and Arts, both journalism and communications are listed as preferred disciplines. And if it coincides with your grant dates, scholars are able to participate in the annual Fulbright Conference in Berlin, which is open to a lot of different scholars from across Europe. And they can also apply for an inter-country travel grant in Turkey. So there's lots of different ways to participate as a Fulbright scholar in Turkey. And then lastly, the Ukraine. Preference will be given to projects in the humanities and social sciences, especially projects that contribute to building civil society or educational and political and legal reform in Ukraine, as well as subjects related to the United States. So within this award, affiliations are possible with a variety of academic institutions, including state universities and newer private and public institutions. You may also collaborate with public officials or government agencies and NGOs. So really a wonderful opportunity to get involved in Ukraine through journalism or communications. Okay, so in terms of submitting a competitive application, and we go through this usually in every webinar that we hold because it really is important. And people always ask us, well, how can I submit a competitive application? What makes me competitive? Well, really, it's important not only to address the project goals and the things that you're going to be doing on your research or in your teaching, but to also address why you're applying for a Fulbright grant. Why Fulbright? How is your project and what you hope to do going to contribute to the larger mission of, you know, the cultural diplomacy, the ambassador, the people-to-people interactions, and really kind of serving as, you know, an ambassador of the U.S. when you're there. And also discussing why that particular country. You know, the review committees convene when we have all of the applications, and they always want to see if that's also being justified. Why did you choose Hungary over India, or why are you choosing to going to Denmark versus Finland? So what is it there in that particular country that resonates with your project and your proposal? And then, of course, speaking to cultural diplomacy and that kind of the flexibility, the adaptability. You know, you're not going to be in the United States. You're not going to have the same setup or your classroom with the same kind of students or the perhaps the research facilities. Things will be different. So how will you incorporate modifications if things don't necessarily go as planned or if the students, you get there and you realize perhaps your syllabi were a little too easy or a little too challenging, and so having kind of that adaptability kind of addressed in your project statement. And then, of course, last but not least, the outcomes and the impact. So we're always looking to see if you discuss that multiplier effect. Not only the outcome at the host institution, the country that you're going to be based in, but also when you get back. You know, not that your Fulbright grant ends when you get on the plane coming home to the U.S. So how will, you know, what is the impact? Do you hope to collaborate with the institution in the future? Do you hope to publish anything or, you know, promote the program to your students or in a way, kind of internationalizing your campus? So although it's all kind of projected and predicted, but what can you tell us about your project? Because we're really looking to see the kind of the legacy of the grant continue. All right, moving on to the review process and the timeline. I know that we're going a little over in terms of I want to get time for questions, so I'm going to kind of go through this pretty quickly. But August 1st, 2018, so this coming August, is the deadline, and the month of August is devoted to reviewing all applications for completeness and technical eligibility. Once that's complete in September, we convene the discipline reviews. So this is where peers from your discipline will be reviewing your project for academic merit, feasibility, et cetera. From September to early November, we convene the peer review committees in Washington, D.C., and this is where committees are made up of alumni, usually, that have experienced, they have gone on a grant to that particular country or the region, and they're from a range of disciplines. So that's why it's important that your project statement not only speak to the general, to the specialist, but also to the generalist, that you have somebody in your discipline and outside of your discipline read and review your project proposal, your project statement. At the conclusion of the peer committees, applications are either recommended or not recommended for the final round of reviews in country. So either the Fulbright Commissions abroad, the Binational Fulbright Commissions, or the embassies that administer the Fulbright program if there's not a commission. From November to January, those are reviewed, and any that are recommended by the commissions and embassies are then cleared with the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board, the FFSB, and then starting in February, going all the way till May, so we've just concluded this, grantees are notified of their selection. And packets are then sent to them, and then we have various pre-departure orientations organized for those that do not have them when they in country. So that's essentially the timeline. And just to let you know, the website has a vast number of resources available. All of these here are linked. So when you see this webinar in a few days next week, it should probably be uploaded in the archive. You can go through and click on all of these resources. The webinars we have going on up until the end of the competition, so until end of July we'll be hosting various webinars. Check out the Scholar blog, make contact with some grantees if you have questions about a particular award or country. And also I recommend at the bottom connecting with us on My Fulbright if you haven't done so already. So this is a way to keep up with the news and the letters that we send out, the information that we send out about the grants and the deadlines and things like that. So just some real quick Q&A before we dive into the live Q&A. If you're wondering how you can contact us, as I mentioned, each region has a program email inbox. So, for example, South and Central Asia is southcentralasia@iie.org. So be sure to contact the program staff that manage that region. And, of course, the application deadline is August 1st, so this is a wonderful time to start thinking about putting your application together and selecting your referees. And how many applications do we get, and what is the success rate? We get this question quite a bit, and we can't share that information per the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board policy, so that's something we don't share. And can I apply to two or more awards in the same competition? And no, the answer is you can only apply for one award per competition, and this is really where selecting the appropriate award, kind of the best fit for you and the award, this is where it's really important to kind of go through and do a search and filter as many options out, and then once you've got a couple of options, narrow it down to the one award. All right, so I hope this webinar was informative, and I think what we'll do, we've got about a little over 15 minutes, and we can start taking some questions live and also addressing the questions that we had applicants submit before the webinar. So I'm going to take one of them that we got in yesterday. Can the research be a combination of two countries? And as I mentioned, you can only apply for one award, but if the award itself is a multi-country award, then that could be feasible. So we have some, we do have some multi-country options. We have, first of all, the Global Award. The Global Scholar Award allows you to research or teach in 2 to 3 world regions. So any of the world regions that I discussed, whether it's Middle East and North Africa, Europe, your Asia, you need to select 2 to 3 countries within those world regions. So that's one way. And then we have the multi-country awards like the Sub-Saharan Africa Regional Research Program or the South and Central Asia Regional Research Program Award. So be sure to look at that if it's a region that you want to explore more in depth. All right. Okay, we have a question. How do I find out what areas are of high need in my preferred countries of Jamaica and France? Okay, so this is an excellent question in terms of selecting the right fit. So let's say you have a communications background and you specialize in intercultural communications. Take a look at both award descriptions for Jamaica and France, and see if one has specific wording in terms of either specializations or preferred discipline or things like that, because really matching up your profile to what the award is looking for is the best way of going about that. You can also do the keyword search, as I mentioned in the catalog. You can do keyword search because we just have the disciplines as a drop-down menu, but sometimes you'd like to, you know, we don't have media as a drop-down, but you could type in media, for example, or you know, different things within communications or journalism. So that's one way to kind of search. And I really do, I can't emphasize enough that it really is important to find the right award to your profile. If you have a specialization in something and you see that, let's say we're talking about Belgium. So if you have a specialization in something and there's an award to Belgium that has that specialization clearly mentioned in the title or in the preferred discipline, but you apply for the All Disciplines Award to Belgium, the committee might say, well, why didn't he or she apply to that award that was more specific? Why did the applicant choose the All Disciplines? So really making sure that you're not just defaulting to All Disciplines, although the All Disciplines Awards are great and they make up more than half the awards in the catalog, but if there is something specific that speaks to your profile and your background, go with that one. And let's see what else we've got. Another question coming in. Okay, how do we find contacts for potential fit and letters of invitation? So we've discussed that. And in terms of getting more information about that, we actually do have some specific web page dedicated to all of that and what specifically should be listed in the letter of invitation. So take a look at that. All right. So let's see. Let's go down and find another one. Okay. Do unsuccessful applicants receive feedback? So this is a question that we get often. And the answer is kind of yes and no. So we're able to, it also depends on, you know, if you've gone through successfully all the way up to the in-country review and then you were not selected at that level, The commissions and the embassies abroad do not share any information with us, so we're not able to comment on your application at all. We could, you know, kind of, you could speak to the program staff that manage that region, and we could kind of, you know, kind of look at your application and see if there were areas of weakness or whatnot, but again, we don't receive any feedback from the commission which makes the final decision. And then if you were not recommended at the peer review level, then again, our program staff would be happy to help you kind of troubleshoot and find areas. They'll walk you through the review criteria, essentially, and you can assess that way if there was something lacking in your application. All right, so moving along. Let's go down. Let's see. Is it more successful to apply to a smaller country than a larger country? Do many applications tend to focus around a few awards versus others? So I would say, again, this kind of goes back to the best fit advice, and really whether it's a large country or a big country, or it has a large number of awards or a small number of awards, that really shouldn't be something you're thinking about. What you should really be thinking about is, are you the best fit for that award? Does your project really speak to what the award is looking for? Because keep in mind, and I don't think a lot of people are, you know, realize this, but the Fulbright program is really, a lot of the funding comes from our binational partners, so the partners that are listed in the catalog. So, for example, the Fulbright Commission in Jordan, the Fulbright Commission in Germany, or the Fulbright Commission in India, they're also, you know, they've got a stake in this. They're also funding part of this. And so they really do, they're looking for specific things. And of course, this is a great way to, you know, help build capacity or be a cultural ambassador. And so really paying attention to what the country wants. And if your profile and your project statement really match what's in the award description, then that's the best way, and you'll have, you know, that's the best way to approach it, because you'll have a competitive profile, competitive application. All right, so let's see. Okay, let's take a look. Keep going down. We're getting some more questions. All right. As a journalist of 20 years and a professor of practice, are there opportunities to work with media organizations? So if you have any specific media organization in mind, in terms of being your host institution, I would discuss that with the program staff that can help you with that specifically in terms of that award. Again, the award description may, in terms of locations, where it lists locations in the award description, that would be helpful to look at. If it says specifically only a host institute, you know, only a university, an institute of higher education, then that would be ruled out. But if it says research centers or NGOs or appropriate institutions, that if it's kind of more open-ended, you could run it past us, or if they have a contact with for the Fulbright Commission in that country, you could also reach out to them and get some clarification. All right, let's see. Okay, so if someone goes on a sabbatical and they're also receiving their salary at the university, would the award stipend be in addition to this or in lieu of that salary? We do get this question a lot, so that's not a problem. So basically what we do is, if you are selected for a grant, we ask that you list any salary that you'll be having during the course of the grant, and then if adjustments need to be made, that may happen, but again, that's a different team that deals with that, so I'm not well versed in the exact details of that, but we do ask that you list your salary there, because they may need to make some adjustments. Okay, okay, for multi-country projects such as the Africa Regional Research Program, are the benefits usually the same listed for the in-country programs such as housing? So again, take a look at the specific award description on that. They usually try and keep them at parity from what I understand, but again, each award is different. So take a look at the exact benefits. There's a benefits tab for each award, and you can take a look that way. All right, let's take a look. Okay, this is a good question. Is previous experience in the country that you're applying to, is that a disadvantage? Not necessarily. Again, in the project proposal and throughout the application, if you have resided or had any extensive trips in the past 6 years, we ask that you list that. But of course, anything in your CV that shows you've had some international experience, that's always helpful. But if you've had extensive experience in a particular country, or any, let's say, previous experience, whether it's extensive or not, it could go either way. And again, I'm going to always say go back to the award description, because some awards clearly state that there's a preference for applicants who don't have extensive experience. But if you visited the country once or twice and you know, they weren't extensive stays, that doesn't really count. If you've done, you know, several years, if you've spent several years in a particular country and have recently returned from an extended stay there, you may not be prioritized for an award. But again, there isn't necessarily any award that rules out, you know, it wouldn't make you ineligible to apply. So some reviewers in some countries see an advantage, actually, if you've had previous experience in that country and now you'd like to go under the auspices of the Fulbright program, you would actually be able to, you know, kind of hit the ground running, so to speak, and that familiarity would be an advantage. So again, it really depends. You can reach out to the program staff and discuss that further. Okay, what else have we got? What does the grant cover? Okay, in terms of the expenses. So if you take a look at the award, and you'll see in every award description there's a benefits tab. So the benefits, you know, may or may not include housing. Again, some awards include housing, and then they give you the grant on top of it. Others will give you a housing allowance in addition to the grant. So the grant is essentially, you know, it's your stipend for when you're there and to kind of to add to the income that you have if you're not getting paid back home. So it's really intended for you to be able to live kind of at the same level that you've been living in the U.S. So that's the goal for each country, is to have that kind of standard set across. Let's see. All right, we have a few more minutes. Let's go back to the questions that came in yesterday. All right, let's see. Which countries are particularly interested in a journalism educator? So I've kind of covered some of the awards that are specifically interested in teaching. So if you have a journalism background, I would go on to the catalog of awards, and I would filter for awards that are teaching, and then discipline would be journalism. And that way you can see specifically, and it tends to be often the case, a lot of the journalism awards are interested in some kind of teaching component, so that there's that collaboration with students and faculty and kind of that capacity building. So that's one way to search the catalog for that. Okay, let's see. I have a question about different kinds of projects for journalism in terms of multimedia presentations, et cetera. And really, I mean, it's up to you, of course, what you hope to do. Again, taking a look at what the award description is looking for. If you reach out to a potential host institution and kind of gauge their interest in your project, there's, you know, some are very open, some are very specific in terms of what they're looking for. As I mentioned, some grants are specific in they want, you know, broadcast journalism, documentary training, radio series, things like that. Others are wide open. So really it's up to you. If it has that vagueness to it, reaching out to a potential host and proposing what you'd like to do would be one way to start. Let's see. If I'm a photographer, are there awards that preference photography projects and education? So I haven't seen any specifically, but again, there's more than 470 awards in the catalog, so again, you could type in photography as a keyword and then, you know, look for teaching awards. That would be one way to start. Also typing in photography, seeing what other grantees have done. I know that we have had a handful of grantees that had photography backgrounds going into the Scholar Directory, searching for photography and seeing what they did, where they went. That's always a helpful way to start. Okay. Let's see, we've got... Which areas or awards address media law? So in this case, I would recommend that you look for awards that are interested in law scholars, and then see what if they're looking for any particular type of law, and if not, if it's open, then you could do what you're interested in. So taking a look at the awards in law would be a way to start for that. Okay. We have a question here. I'm curious about awards of shorter duration, like under 2 months. Are there any awards in communication with that duration? And the answer is no. With the Fulbright Scholar Program, the minimum grant, the shortest grant that we have, the minimum length is 2 months. And most of them tend to be 3 months or longer. So Of course, we do have the flex option. So if you have a four-month grant, you could break it up to two visits over, two months for two visits for a total of 4 months. So that's one way of doing it. If you're interested specifically in the short-term grants, I did mention the Fulbright Specialist Program, which is administered by World Learning, and that might be something of interest. Those are 2 to 6 week kind of consultation-based projects that you would go out on. And the way you apply is rather different from the Scholar Program. You would need to check the website, but you apply to get on the roster, and if there's any projects that are in your field or that match to your profile, then they contact you. So that's another way to engage with Fulbright. It's a wonderful program. It's called the Fulbright Specialist Program, and those are for opportunities for 2 to 6 weeks in length. Okay, so as a community college professor, are there search terms that might help me in finding awards appropriate for my background? Okay, great. So this is a good question. I'm glad that we have some community college faculty here. There's a big interest in having community college applicants as well, professors and faculty. In terms of finding what would fit your background, again, you could do the discipline search or the keyword search, but keep in mind you are welcome to apply for most of the awards. Again, for specifics on an award, if you're curious if you're eligible or if it would be an interesting topic, reach out to the program staff. Okay, I think that is about it. I think we've got to all the questions and we're right on time, 3 minutes to 3. So I just want to say if you have any questions that come up after this webinar, please feel free to reach out to us. The country, each region has its contacts and every award has the program staff, so you can contact us that way. And I want to thank you for attending this webinar. We do a lot of webinars, and so there's lots of ways to get information, and I hope you can see that there's lots of different award opportunities for applicants with communications or journalism backgrounds. And again, feel free to reach out to us afterwards. This will be archived. It should be up on our website next week in the same place where you found the link to register. There's a past webinars tab that you would click on, and you can have this presentation, you can listen to the audio, you can see the visual, you can get everything, all the links. And on behalf of the Fulbright Program and IIE, I want to wish you a wonderful rest of the day and a successful application. Thank you. Bye-bye.